ER101. In conjunction with the American College of Emergency Physicians, get the 411 on your 911. Here's your host, Dr. Lee Vinoker.
Hi, and welcome to ER101. We are going to talk today. I mean, anyone who in the last week had been watching the NCAA championships, and with Louisville winning over my alma mater, Michigan, I have to say I was rooting for Michigan. But in any event, that gruesome injury that Kevin Ware had, where he came down and broke his leg, was something that people have been talking about since that time. And I want to welcome my first guest. We're lucky enough to have Dr. Ricardo Martinez. He's a board-certified emergency physician. He practices at Grady Memorial and is assistant professor of emergency medicine at Emory School of Medicine. He's also the chief medical officer at North Highlands Company. He's been a past administrator of the National Highway Traffic and Safety Administration, and he's a medical supervisor for the Super Bowl, so he knows a few things about sports injuries. Thank you and welcome, Dr. Martinez, for being
here. Thank you. Good morning.
So, good morning to you. So, in any event, that was kind of just a crazy injury. And people, you know, I even though I'm a doctor, I have to say orthopedic injuries, maybe because I had a lot of knee injuries when I was younger in high school sports and stuff, they actually make me cringe of every kind of thing, especially when you see a joint that's not in a natural position or a bone. But I was doing a little research, and, you know, initially I thought maybe there was something pathologic going on, you know, a stress fracture, or we'd find out he had a tumor, heaven forbid. But actually, basketball, from what I found a statistic that basketball injuries, now some were professional, some were not, were over 500,000, 529,000, compared to, say, the next was biking, and football was third in most common injuries that we see here in the U.S. That struck me as a little odd.
Yeah, it does. But, you know, what's interesting is it depends on how severe those injuries are, right? I mean, football is a very high contact sport. Basketball is a contact sport. But think about this. This was really him coming down by himself. You know, some of the other big injuries like this, you've seen Joe Theismann's famous one years ago, was basically the leg was stuck, and then I think Lawrence Taylor weighed a couple of hundred pounds, landed on his leg and broke it. I was just like you. When I saw that injury, two things. One, I was horrified. But secondly, I thought there's something wrong here, because the way you break something is usually an abnormal force on a normal leg, right? Or a normal force on an abnormal leg. Or a normal force, normal leg, abnormal position, right? So right. I couldn't quite figure it out. But like you, I thought, okay, he's got to have a healthy guy. This is something underneath that. Either it's a cancer or he's got a bone cyst or something. And interesting enough, years ago there was a basketball player whose name escapes me. But apparently he was running up and down some stairs, slipped, hit his leg, and then 3 or 4 days later had his leg break on him. So there was a belief that probably had a small fracture. There's still a lot of debate about what happened on him, but when I saw it, my first concern was, do people know what to do, right? Do people know what to do? Because if you look at it, a lot of the replays were how horrified people were, which is very different than actually stepping up and helping solve a problem, right? Because you and I both know when the leg breaks like that, not only is the bone broken, but there's a possibility that because if it's angulated, the blood supply is now kinked and can't get down, and losing part of the leg down there is that, you know, far away from your heart. So, you know, a lot of us had the same thoughts, and, you know, people know what to do. And I kind of watched the videos for a while. I was lucky to see somebody came up, A, covered it, because he had an exposed bone. And then secondly,
it went
they
right
seemed
through
to straight
the skin.
It.
Right.
Yeah.
So tell people, I mean, so that's a very specific compound fracture, multiple bones, open fracture, and there are a lot of complications and risks associated with that.
Yeah, and you know, just for the audience, you know, compound means, you know, it's broken multiple places, right? And it's complex or open because it went through the skin. And one of the great things about the bone or our body is we have our bones deep inside, and so they stay fairly sterile, right? And so when you break it,
some
and it
more
pops
than
through,
others. Some are deeper more than others. But yeah, he's a pretty thin kid. I have to say, you know, his legs were pretty thin looking when I saw him. He was pretty spindly.
Yeah, and you can rub your fingers up and feel the bone right there in your shin, right? That's the bone that he broke. And so, you know, when he broke it, you get a rough edge, sharp edge to it, pop through the skin, because remember, he was up in the air when he broke it coming down, so it had all that weight pop going through and sliding through the skin. But the real problem is now you have contamination, and you have open to the air and dirt and everything else they keep on basketball floors. And so they have to go to the operating room and really clean him out. And there's, you know, there's a lot of work to be done to take such a major weight-bearing bone to put it back in place. You know, we always talk about replace your divots, right? And then even whether they could put metal in or not really had to do with how clean they thought it was, because metal's a foreign body. But they had to put it back together, and then, you know, then the healing starts. And, you know, as a general rule for the audience, bone's a pretty cool thing, because it kind of puts out this glue around it made of the marrow. And then that begins to get sticky, but that takes about 2 weeks, and then that has to then convert back into bone, and it remodels. It's another, 8 to 12 weeks. So he's got a lot of work to do there before he's back. But we're really pleased so far. I think like he's doing pretty good.
Right, and they did describe where they put this rod in now. In the old days, you know, you'd see people walking around, especially open bones, or I guess you're right, if it's really a contaminated wound, like, you know, in a car accident, right, where you're out in the gravel and the dirt and you have these bad open compound fractures, they put these external devices on because they don't even want to close the skin or put anything inside the bone.
Yeah, that's exactly right. The ORF, right? Open. They do the
open
big
reduction.
Framework.
External fixation.
That's right. And you see them with these big things sticking out, just because they got to stay away from the wound site, right? They don't want to put anything there that's going to attract bacteria. You know, the second part of what we were talking about, though, is the thing that actually concerns me the most. You know, we've built a whole society now that knows they can just dial 911, right? And so the question that always comes up. That's great. What do you do till help arrives? And so, you know, you go back and look at the videos, and you'll see people are just totally horrified. The truth is that you have to run toward the person, not away from the person. You have to be able to do some basic things for them. Straighten his leg is very important, right? And you do that by basically pulling away from the body so that you're putting a little traction on and straighten that back out. What's funny, people don't realize, and you know this, Lee, from your own experience, is that it actually creates a lot of relief. It gets rid of a lot of pain because it's very painful to have all those muscles pulling in the wrong direction against bone. And then the second thing is, you know, to cover it up, make sure he's okay. There's not a lot of blood loss. If they had blood loss, because, you know, bone can't constrict and stop bleeding. You know, you have to put pressure on it. So what we really suggest, and one of the things that we do when we go to stadium for the NFL, is look for emergency action plans. Do people know what to do? Do we know what hospital they're going to go to? Do they know what numbers to call? So, you know, there's a movement now in sports to really kind of make sure there is an emergency action plan. So when you show up somewhere you don't normally play, right, like Louisville and Michigan playing there, everybody's on the same page in terms of how to respond. And those teams have trainers and they have physicians. But you really need a lot of help in a situation like that. So that's one of the things I think I hope people look at, too. Did the event have an emergency action plan that people knew, right? Do the teams have one? Do they exchange them? Anything we can do to make the recovery of that or the response to that better, we think is a good thing, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And you think about it, teams do travel with their orthopedic surgeons, but yeah, when you're in another city, most hospitals don't let visiting doctors operate in their operating rooms, correct?
No, they get lucky past the waiting room, right? You know, what's funny, you know, it used to be that states would give you temporary privileges, that sort of thing, and we would do that for the different docs coming in. But so the audience understands, the doctors get privileges in specific hospitals by that medical staff. And so when the teams travel, really you're using the local medical staff to do that. And so having everything worked out so you can have a seamless care and take care of the players is a good idea.
Yeah, that is. And I think that, you know, because it was an injury at a big event, they did get to him fairly quickly.